Welcome back to the Morning Mix, Project Censored Show. I'm Mickey Huff in studio with Peter Phillips. We're now joined by Ann Garrison in studio. Ann Garrison is a writer and Pacifica programmer, a regular contributor to KPFA Weekend News and WBAI's Afrobeat Radio. Ann specializes in covering Africa and is currently writing a chapter on corporate media censorship of news about Africa for Project Censored 2012 yearbook. Ann Garrison, welcome to the studio.
Thank you.
Well, one of the things that you talk about right away, Ann, is the dependency of the U.S. military empire upon minerals in particular from Africa and the Congo. Tell us about that, and why is that so vital?
This is longstanding. I think this is the overarching context in which this has to be understood. The mineral wealth, which is essential to military manufacture, to the U.S. sustaining empire, exists in Africa, especially southern Africa, and it's highly concentrated in, surprise, surprise, Afghanistan. Also in Russia, and this is one reason you don't see Russia being a belligerent in Africa now that the Cold War is over, because they have all the oil and all the mineral wealth that they need to manufacture all the weapons and everything else they want. China and the U.S. don't. That's why you have the standoff between China and the U.S. in Africa.
And it's not just minerals for warfare, per se, and weaponry. It's also a lot of the things that are driving the consumer economy, cell phones, computers. I mean, there's a whole variety of reasons that you have these Western countries in Africa. I wanted to point out, though, something that you had mentioned prior, and that is the press coverage of involvement in Africa is, well, certainly for someone from your perspective who's followed it for so long, I imagine corporate media coverage, even alternative media coverage, often doesn't make a lot of sense. Could you talk a little bit about, you know, some of the media coverage and why there are so many problems with the distortion of issues coming out of Africa?
The idea that I used to give the various things I decided to talk about in the essay shape is the velvet glove on the military fist. This is a phrase that I borrowed from Amira Wood, who uses it in Resist AFRICOM, the Institute for Policy Studies video about resisting the latest U.S. command, the U.S. Africa command. She says, really, this is nothing new, but the military fist is cloaked in the velvet glove of humanitarianism and development. And because we don't see big bombs dropping out of the sky, except now in Libya, and we don't see American soldiers dying in Africa, it's more difficult for people to understand the extent of the military aggression there and to understand that we have proxy warriors serving the U.S. military interest all over the continent. And there are all kinds of faux humanitarian projects and U.N. peacekeepers, quote-unquote, who really should be called U.N. troops and understood as troops dispatched by the Security Council.
Can you talk about faux humanitarian movements a little bit?
One of the most serious, and one of those that I think people in this area, in the San Francisco Bay Area, should understand, is PEPFAR, the President's Emergency Plan for AIDS Relief. Now, I don't want to say that this is all bad and that some people haven't received care. But one of the first things to understand about PEPFAR is that, like all foreign aid, it must serve U.S. geostrategic interest. Therefore, PEPFAR has 15 focus countries, 13 African countries, and Haiti and Vietnam.
So what you're saying, I think, is that, yes, we have humanitarian programs going on. There are NGOs that do good things. But the overall objective is control of Africa, to keep the Chinese out, control not only of the mineral wealth, but the oil as well, and to have in place governments or NATO, UN occupations to keep the populations in line as we pull mineral wealth out of Africa.
Exactly. And actually, there's an argument that the NGOs aren't doing any good at all. There's a book by Michael Maron. It says the big NGOs, which are really big nonprofit corporations and government contractors, are serving no purpose and are really doing harm here. Often they go in hand with the military operations. This is called catastrophe management. And there's something like this going on very badly in Somalia right now. We are funding a military operation, well, actually the UN. There are UN peacekeepers, so-called UN troops, Ugandan troops in Somalia. mean, there's an all-out war going on in Somalia, and it actually looks like al-Shabaab is winning outside of Mogadishu. There are, according to Thomas Mountain, about a million refugees facing slow starvation right now. The UN High Commissioner for Refugees has cut their food aid to 30% of what it was, which means, as he says, slow starvation, while hugely increasing Ugandan proxy warriors there and tanks, helicopter gunships to try to defend this fragile U.S. UN Security Council-backed government in Mogadishu.
Talk about the Rwanda genocide historically and what that means today in the context of our involvements there and our refusal at the time to intervene.
We did intervene. There's a screenshot here that I would like to use in the book. This is the alternative story. The conventional story is that extremist Hutus killed 800,000 Tutsi and moderate Hutu who tried to protect them in 100 days. The U.S. and the rest of the world stood on the sidelines and let this happen. And that then Rwandan President Paul Kagame, then Rwandan general of the Rwandan Patriotic Army, came in and stopped the genocide. In fact, there was a civil war going on there. It had been going on for 4 years. We were backing the Rwandan Patriotic Army, which invaded from Uganda. The alternative story is that, in fact, about a million people died. The vast majority killed were Hutu. The U.S., French, Belgians, and British all knew, and the general that the U.S. backed won. Now, there are no good guys in this story.
There are no good guys.
There are no good guys.
Wow.
Well, now there are a number of people really seeking reconciliation in this situation that I've come to admire a lot. One of them is Victoire Ingabire Umuhoza, who is now in maximum security prison in Rwanda. She went back in January 2010, tried to run for president. I spoke to her a number of times on KPFA. I think that KPFA was the only outlet in the United States that put her on the air. She was also on the BBC and the Voice of America. One of the mysteries with regard to the media situation here is that the Voice of America is actually one of the better outlets in Africa. How this happened, I don't quite understand, but we know this as the nutty station that used to broadcast anti-Castro screeds off the tip of the Florida Panhandle. This is one of the more progressive outlets in Africa now. She could be heard on the BBC, on the VOA, and she was on KPFA. NPR was really disturbing during that election year and with regard to this whole situation, except for Chicago Public Radio Worldview. There's an extraordinary show in Chicago. And there is right now a demonstration going on. President Kagame is in Chicago for something called Rwanda Day, and there are Rwandans and Congolese people gathering from all over. The two things to understand about this are right now that Rwanda is possibly on the verge of another outbreak of violence, just as extreme or worse, because the Hutu population is so repressed. And there's also a lot more weaponry now there that the U.S. has introduced than before. The other thing is that the aftermath of the Rwanda genocide was the Congo War. There are two of them, the first and second Congo Wars, and the ongoing occupation of eastern Congo. The UN mapping report is one of about 17 years worth of reports that came out in October 2010. Actually, it was leaked on August 26th. There were people who did not want this report ever to be produced. It was leaked on August 26th. There were shocked headlines all over the world. The reason it was so shocking was that it said that the Rwandan army had committed massacres that an international criminal court would be expected to try as genocide. So this meant that the army that claimed to have been the savior that stopped the genocide in 1994 was guilty of genocide in Congo. I mean, that case could be made if this evidence were presented in an international criminal court. An international criminal court isn't going to be convened about this. There are too many people who don't want it to happen. As Christopher Black, one of the ICTR defense lawyers, dissident lawyer like Professor Peter Erlander said, they'll never try the RPF because they'll start talking about the Americans and the Belgians and the Canadians and then the whole thing will fall apart. They'll never do that.
So part of understanding Africa, and you're so deeply embedded in it, and you're saying things, there's no contextual understanding inside the U.S. media and or the public to really put most people don't even know where the countries are on the map, let alone what the factions are inside. So when we start bombing a country like Libya and say this is a humanitarian intervention to prevent a massacre by Gaddafi, and then not in that is that the main opposition leaders was in fact, well, the one fella, Gaddafi, H-I-F-T-E-R, Hitler, Hifter, he lived in Virginia on behalf of the CIA for the last 20 years. So he gets there, the first thing they do is set up a central bank. And then $1 billion has just now been released to them so they can implement this war. They're trying to push Gaddafi out. Now, one of the things that Gaddafi had been doing was trying to build an African Union and protect some of the countries there in Africa and undermine the influence of the U.S. dollar by creating an African currency that the central banks in Europe weren't going to allow. I mean, so, but we don't get any of this. We don't get any of the Rwanda army implications. We don't get any of the idea that coltan is primarily from the Congo and is used in every cell phone, every military operation in the world electronically. We don't get that either. So there's this huge gap. And here we are taking 20 minutes and trying to explain it, and it's incredibly difficult.
Okay, I just jotted down a couple of ideas that should be accessible to Americans. First of all, Barack Obama. Barack Obama, in 2006, as a senator, pushed a bill through Congress, the Obama-Congo Relief Security and Democracy Promotion Act of 2006. It's an extraordinary piece of legislation. Whatever you want to say about Barack Obama, the truth of the Congo War is expressed in this bill. My analysis of this bill is probably my most successful publication on the web, in that if you search for Obama in Congo, it is often the first thing that comes up. It has some kind of staying power. The point is that Obama said that the militias in eastern Congo were an apparent pretext for Uganda and Rwanda to be constantly invading and occupying the eastern Congo. This is contrary to what the State Department is generally putting out. Even now that Obama is in office, they're always talking about going after these militias. Well, they've been going after them for years. If these militias didn't exist, and the extent to which they do is even questionable, they would be invented to justify the invasion and occupation of eastern Congo. So I think this is going to be an issue for the substantial African immigrant population in the United States in the 2012 election, and they turned out overwhelmingly, of course, for Obama in 2008. Another is the AIDS issue. The mapping report, released on October 1st, 2010, documents the guilt of the Rwandan and Ugandan armies of mass rape in eastern Congo, massacres and mass rape and sexual atrocities. Well, there are PEPFAR documents saying that PEPFAR has mobile assistance units which serve to keep the armies of Uganda and Rwanda deployed, serve to keep soldiers in those armies deployed, even if they have HIV. Now, I think we really have to ask, why are we trying to keep these soldiers deployed? I can't say exactly what kind of decision is being made there, how conscious it is, but if these soldiers, these armies, are documented to be guilty of mass rape, we shouldn't be providing services to make sure they can remain deployed, even if they have HIV.
We're in conversation with Anne Garrison, who's currently writing a chapter for the upcoming Censor 2012 book on underreported and distorted stories in Africa. Anne Garrison, we're looking forward to seeing the work you're doing, and we can also post more information about what you're doing. We have about 30 seconds left, and could you just quickly, just very quickly wrap up what you see as some of the problems of censorship and what we can do to overcome this gap?
What we can do. I'm sure. There's one last thing I'd like to mention, because it's comprehensible and it's talked about a lot. That is the issue of rape and violence against women. Something that is not addressed is that sexual violence against men, the rape of men, is also common here. And when you talk only about women, then you construct the conflict in a particular way. Women are victimized, then men, male soldiers, must be the perpetrators. Well, if you acknowledge that men are also being raped, and sometimes this is for the intentional targeting of communities with HIV infection to decimate them, then you have to admit that it's an assault on people and an all-out assault on gender, and ask, who are the perpetrators? And what's most important is the armies of Uganda and Rwanda.
Okay, we have to wrap up here this morning. You've been listening to The Morning Mix with Project Censored. I'm Mickey Huff with Peter Phillips. We had Cord Jefferson with us, Mark Pilosuk, talking about soldier suicides. And we've just been in conversation with Ann Garrison. You can hear more of Ann Garrison on KPFA's Weekend News and WBAI's Afrobeat Radio. Also look forward to seeing that chapter in the upcoming Censored 2012 book this year. Peter, thanks for joining me in studio again. We'll be back next Friday with Project Censored Radio or KPFA, KPFB in Berkeley, KFCF in Fresno, and online at kpfa.org. Have a good day, everybody.